Following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show, the Friday version. And we're glad you could join us. And as we normally do when we start, we remind you that just because you hear about an investment opportunity or a tax strategy or other financial details, please don't rush out and try such items on your own, such strategies or investments. Check with your existing advisors, be it real estate, tax, legal, etc., and let's make sure that the particular details were conveyed accurately, and that, more importantly, that it fits your particular objectives, facts and circumstances, etc. I had planned on, on yesterday's show, we got into a discussion regarding the cumulative debt that we're faced with, and I wanted to pick back up with that topic today, and then we can also talk about some articles that I think indicate or illustrate, as the case may be, some of these concepts. In any event, I wanted to mention that, you know, we've got several articles I put up earlier this week that go back a week or two. I have a gap there date-wise if you look at the news page on our BAPlannersShow.com site. And by the way, if you don't have advisors currently that, you know, you're interested in what we do, which is help you understand the math regarding real estate taxation, retirement plan track taxation, and how to access your retirement accounts to invest in real estate private partnership syndications. Or let's assume you're not interested in the multifamily private partnership market, but you've got market-based assets, you know, index funds, mutual funds, stocks, bonds, etc. But you might be interested in the Roth conversions that we undertake for clients. And, you know, you can still do conversions even with market-based assets, but you're going to realize once we explain it in more detail to you that your net taxable cost is going to be higher due to the fact that there's a couple of big discounts that we get when we're valuing private company investments versus stocks, bonds, mutual funds, etc. You know, you've got high marketability on those assets, easy to transact, and we've also got significant other factors, you know, professional management for the most part. You've got some voting capabilities. You can decide when to sell. It's not just the fact that you can easily sell with the markets that help investors transact their positions, but you can make that decision. Whereas when you join a real estate private partnership, you may be as little as a 1% or less than 1% if it's a big, large transaction. And so you don't make the decision to sell. You know, that's made by the syndicator in most cases. But in any event, it's not necessarily a negative. You know, you may recall that the most efficient form of government, at least according to some of the historians I've read, is not a democracy. It's the king, because there's less chefs in the kitchen, so to speak, when you're making decisions. And I'll tell you, syndication, where you've got a sponsor, a syndicator, or a lead partner, these are all synonyms for the same party, to the extent they're going to poll their partners before they make a decision on things, that gets somewhat restrictive when, you know, you think about the normal, even with electronic means, it's hard to get all the cats corralled and get an answer. And so you typically don't see the lead partner asking for, you know, the partners to vote unless it's on fairly significant matters, like, do we want to sell, you know, and that's one that usually sometimes you have zero input on that, but there are certain investor platforms where they require that, you know, the syndicator ask the partners for some sort of consensus. But in any event, let's go back. I want to get back on the debt situation, because that has really been in the news here this week. We're coming up on the end of the U.S. fiscal budgetary year, and so Monday the 30th is the end of the year. And if you look at the U.S. debt clock, which is real time, I don't know if it'll scare you or if you'll just feel overwhelmed to the point where you think, well, you know, somebody else is going to take care of this. But let me tell you, folks, we are the someone else, and we are somehow directly, or maybe you might call it an indirect relationship. But let me tell you, when we run out, we've got a small piece of the discretionary portion of our annual expenditure left. In other words, discretionary means we can pay this item or that item, but not both. And that's going to happen. We're going to have eclipsed, unless we change something, either a policy, a systemic change in policy is what's needed. And I don't mean a small one. You know, the Democrats talk about making the wealthy pay their fair share. Well, that doesn't move the needle on the cumulative debt. And by the way, when Democrats talk about paying your fair share, number one, I've yet to see one Democrat enumerate or explain or agree on what is the fair share. How do you define your or my or a billionaire's fair share? And you know, anytime you hear someone say that, you should ask, well, okay, what is the fair share? When would you say someone's paid their fair share? And, you know, I heard several Democrats over the past week, when they talk about this budgetary calamity that we're in, that we need to have corporations. You know, corporations are those big, evil entities that don't pay their fair share. I don't think there's one Democrat that thinks that we pay or the corporations pay their fair share. And there's certainly not any Democrats that think a successful small business person is paying their fair share. So they always throw out the number $400,000 as being the level they want to start taxing, quote, the wealthy. Well, you know, they were using $400,000 back in 2020 when the Biden administration commenced. Their Build Back Better Act was targeting those at 400. Well, you know, we've only had price increases, inflationary, of 20 to 25%. So shouldn't we be talking about those over 500,000 at this point? They don't even give us a cost of living adjustment. It's crazy how unfair the manner in which they think about rolling these policies out would act. And I'll promise you, there's nuances in the tax code that they haven't even begun to think about that is going to impact people far under the 400,000 level. And I'm not sure, by the way, that's the single level. I think 450 is what they're thinking for the line in the sand on the married filing joint scenario. So, but you know, the point is, hey, you know, let's raise that line for all the inflation that you guys have caused and make it fair. But one other thing that'll be interesting to see, I haven't seen it discussed yet, and boy, it'd be great to be in a town hall where if you thought you could connect, if we weren't dealing with economically illiterate people at most levels of government, including both parties, but for sure the Democratic contender for president. I think Mr. Trump's pretty sharp when it comes to economics and tariffs, and contrary to what Ms. Harris would like to say, you know, he hasn't explained the ROI. Well, I'm sorry, but she wouldn't know the ROI if it walked up and kissed her. I mean, there's just no, you know, there's no understanding of economics and tariffs. And the things that she says, what Trump doesn't realize, Trump's already done the tariffs. And by the way, you guys, the Biden administration, left the tariffs in place. If they were so horrible and if they affected the middle class, why didn't you change them? You know, it was their inflationary spending that caused, or their spending that caused the inflationary issue, as we all know. And unfortunately, when she raises taxes, if she were to get elected and raises taxes, do you think the extra tax receipts are going to go to paying down the debt? Heck no. They're looking to use that to spend even more. That's what's going to pay for all the green stuff that we want to buy. And so we're marching towards the day. It's going to be in 2028, 29, or 30, just depending on how badly they run the budget between now and then, you know, the economic assumptions underpinning that time frame, that we're going to be out of the discretionary part of our budget. And we will no longer be able to pay 100% of the debt service on our treasury bills. And if you think that the interest we paid this year, which, by the way, the amount of interest that got paid in the current year, let me just get the real live number. And of course, this is calculating real time. The usdebtclock.org website looks like a pinball machine. $953 billion. So just call it 954. It's actually, we'll be there past that over the weekend. And on Monday, supposedly, we will have spent $1 trillion this year on interest on the debt. First time we will have crossed that threshold in our history, of course. And it's now the third largest component of the U.S. budget expenditure, budget items. Medicare and Medicaid is number one. It's $1.8 trillion. Let's see. Social Security is $1.478 trillion. So it's a little bit behind Medicare and Medicaid. Defense used to be in the third spot, but it's only $930 billion. Now interest has surpassed defense, so it's in the third spot. And again, it's almost $954 billion. So it's supposed to hit a trillion here, I guess, over the weekend. But anyway, it's more than alarming. And, you know, I don't know. I don't, you know, we're fortunate in a way that it's so bad our current debt holders like China can't unload the, in their case, trillions that they hold. And other countries, for the most part, are sticking to the dollar in terms of their currency reserves, although Saudi Arabia is now accepting other currencies on their petroleum transactions. So that could be the beginning of the end of people looking to the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, because, you know, our situation on debt is just striking in terms of how bad it is. And it seems like there's no end to the spending that's being proposed on both sides. So I don't know. If you're not familiar with this website that tracks the debt, and by the way, they've got a mobile app, you know, when you're waiting for your car wash or whatever you're doing and have some time. Of course, you won't get a warm fuzzy by looking at this, but it helps to be in the know, and it explains why I bring up the topic of Roth conversion almost every show that we're on the air with, because if you're sitting with your retirement funds in pre-tax accounts, you really don't have near as much money as you think you do. And, you know, the tax brackets will go up, the tax rates, they will go up. They're currently at the lowest level in many of our lifetimes. If you're 60 or younger, the rates have never been lower in the history of your life. I'm 64, and I think the rates were a tad lower in the early or late 50s, if I recall, but into the early 60s. But, you know, think of it as the tax brackets being on sale. And if you look at even what you might call independent reports, such as the Congressional Budget Office, their 2009 study that they provided Congress on what they need to do to fix the deficit, they suggested it would take tax brackets that were, or tax rates that were 150% of what they were in 2008 was their cutoff. And of course, then we had only borrowed maybe 60% of our GDP, so the federal debt was only 60% of GDP. Now we're over the 100 mark, and there's some argument over which variables to include in the calculation. I've seen some, CBO says we're just over 100, whereas some economists say that we're at 130 to 140% of GDP. And again, it's the assumptions that get used. Well, let's take a break. Let's go do a couple commercials, and we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. Here's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195.
713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com. nathan@npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. If you are interested in connecting with me for a question, maybe, perhaps on the air, if it's relevant to the content on the day you send it, you can send it during the show, you can send it anytime to 713-581-0195, and I will connect with you. If I don't answer it on the air, I'll connect with you several days hence. And for those of you that want to consider working with us, if you go to the BeAPlannerShow.com website, you'll find a link to forms, basically right side of the page, maybe 6 inches down. And that'll take you to our intake forms. And if you will fill out at least step one, form one, the client profile, that'll give us enough of an overview on your facts and circumstances to where we will be able to have a phone call with you, which you can schedule right next. I'm sorry, you can schedule at the link right next to the form links, schedule a call, and be happy to spend some time on the phone with you. And then if you fill out the first form, I may ask you to fill out one or two of the remaining three, just depending on what I see. But, you know, it's hard to have a conversation. And in fact, we're limited by our professional and ethical rules from discussing tax information with you unless we have some sort of information about, you know, what you're looking for objective-wise and where you are presently with your tax situation. Excuse me just a second. I've got a cough. Okay. So, you know, I always like to drill down a bit on this debt clock because it kind of translates to how much do each of us owe. If you think about it, I mean, you know, you and I are buying, you know, we're funding the elderly with our Medicare and Social Security expenditure. Maybe maybe funding some of your living expenses. We're funding, you know, the missiles and the bombs that we produce to protect our country or to give away to our allies. And by the way, the Republicans, when you ask them what we need to do to fix the deficit, that you always, one of the things will be, we need to quit giving so much foreign aid away. And, you know, again, as the Democrats want to tax the wealthy, even though they can't tell you how much is fair, they want them to pay their fair share and the corporations. and, you know, Republicans want to quit giving away foreign aid, you could add those two amounts up, multiply by 10, and you wouldn't move the needle on the cumulative deficit. It's just not that significant compared to a systematic policy change like changing the Social Security retirement age, reducing the index level from something other than cost of living. And I don't have that solution. I look at these numbers and I just think, well, and this is probably how most of Congress thinks, I'm 64 years old. And even if I live to the IRS life expectancy table number that I'm projected to, that's mid-80s for us males. It's 87, 88 for females. You still might think, well, is this really my problem? And I'm telling you, it is your problem, and it does translate to higher taxes. There is no question. The only bastion of big dollars, I mean big dollars, that will move the needle is in the middle class. We are the taxpayers of note. And so, you know, when you look at the potential sources and potential policy changes, one of the policy changes is going to be that we can't be paying the lowest tax rates in our lifetime. Okay, it's just not going to work. And I know it's heartwarming when you see, well, I guess both of the candidates for president now are saying they're not going to tax tips. And at least one of them, Mr. Trump, is saying he doesn't want to tax Social Security. And I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean he wants the needs test and not tax a lot of recipients? Or does it mean everybody is going to avoid the tax on the money that they've already paid in, which would only seem fair? And by the way, the current occupant of the White House voted to pass the tax bill that started taxing Social Security and the subsequent one that raised the level of tax, if I'm not mistaken. It was both. And, you know, it's amazing how even though the seniors are such a significant voting bloc and becoming more significant because of the grain of the population, that's graying, all the baby boomers. You know, I think if I remember right, we've got 10,800 people a day come onto the Medicare rolls. That's significant. You think about the explosion and those costs. And yet, 10 years from now, according to CBO, I'm going to keep referring to the Congressional Budget Office because whether they get it right or not, they're still the only umpire that matters. They're calling the balls and strikes, etc. And they show that the interest expense on servicing the debt 10 years hence, 2034, that will be the number one item in the budget items. And so even with the explosion of, you know, 10,000 more people a day coming onto the Medicare and Medicaid rolls, interest expense will still be the dominant budget item. It's amazing. So anyway, the current, and this is only the amount of the deficit or the debt that affects the current budgetary cycle. All the stuff that we've committed to that affects 10 years out or probably even next year, I forget where they draw the line, we don't book those liabilities on the government accounting system or balance sheet. That's, you know, we're the only developed economy that doesn't report that on our financial reporting. The other developed economies do. And if you throw that in, well, then our cumulative debt is far more than the $35.5 trillion we cop to now. It's more in the neighborhood of $135 trillion, up to maybe as much as 200. Depends on, again, the economic assumptions we use. In any event, the debt per taxpayer is sitting at $269,269. It's a crazy number, but anyway. So what do we do about it? Let's bring this back home. You know, how do we minimize the amount of tax that we're going to pay as we get into retirement? Because, you know, we got a big unknown here. When you tell me, hey, I've got this much in my IRAs or 401s, or I've got a pension of X, you know, the unknown we have is you're not telling me, well, when do you plan to pass away? And if you could tell me that, then we could work this out mathematically, and we'd know exactly the strategy or strategies that we might want to employ. And unfortunately, we don't have that luxury. And when you look out, you know, in my case, 85, 86, that's a lot of years left that I need to produce the income or spend down assets to pay bills. And as an aside, I'm just going to say, and something I suggest other Americans are doing, is I live abroad most of the time. I live in Thailand, where you can live for about 30% of what things would cost you in America. And I'm not talking about brand items. I know we had some Kirkland product from the Costco company in Thailand. It was, I think it was a joint venture with Costco, the dominant department store or mall chain undertook. But I'll never forget, first time I went in there, I'm looking at prices, and I told my wife, I said, this isn't going to work. The, you know, Costco in America is marketed as a discount operation, right? Same with Sam's, you know, cash and carry business model, which we have in Thailand, not Sam's or Costco. We have a brand called Macro. And but this Tops Club, which appeared to me, I mean, 85% of the products in there were Kirkland. But as an example, you know, I happen to know what the frozen beef patty package at Costco, I think it's got 18 or 20 hamburger patties. It's like $19 or $20 maybe. I don't know. I lose track with inflation, and I don't buy those, but I've looked at them before. I've thought about it. But that same package was $75 in this Tops Club in Bangkok. And it's like, you know, if I won't buy it because I think it's too expensive, I can promise you the Thai people won't buy it. Anyway, that endeavor has closed up. It lasted less than a year, and it's not surprising that if the pricing was three times what it was in America, not in Thailand, in America, that's crazy. And would suggest to you that the business model in America works, and it works great, but that kind of pricing isn't going to work. I don't know what. I know there's Costco's in other Asian countries, China being the big one, or maybe it's Taiwan, or both. I'm not sure how their pricing is, but since they've been open for quite a while, I suspect it's they found a way to get the product there much more cheaply. But anyway, for those of you that are thinking, as many Americans are, that you too might want to consider at least part-time living abroad because of the significant advantages, at least that I enjoy in Thailand. The medical care is outstanding at a fraction of the cost in America, and it's not socialized medicine like it is now in America. And there is a nationalized health program for the Thai, but you know, they can go to the hospital for a dollar, basically, but they can't go to the hospitals that are going to cure your cancer or, you know, things on that scale. Those are private. And but even without insurance, the cost is significantly lower than it is. And it's much more than 60% lower. It's crazy how cheap it is to get quality health care and very modern, you know, up-to-date hospitals. But anyway, let me know if you're interested specifically in Thailand, and I will consult with you on cutting your learning curve hugely and provide somewhat of a concierge approach to helping you understand where you want to live, what part of town, traffic patterns, the better schools, that sort of thing. I've lived it, you know, been going back and forth and living there now for, let's see, roughly 2007. So what is that, 18 or 17 years? So anyway, let's go ahead and take our last break, and we'll come back with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. And I hope that will tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make it.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And so we were just before the break, we were talking about more about the debt problem and the fact that our tax rates are inevitably, probably for the first time in a long time, I would say with some certainty, certainly before I started practicing, I've been hearing, which was 1981, I've been hearing, you know, tax rates are going to go up. And of course they came down, the Tax Reform Act of 1986, when, the Tip O'Neill on the Democratic side and, can't remember who the Republican was. I guess it was probably Gingrich, that they crossed the aisle and worked with President Reagan to, you know, lower the rates. Of course, they wiped out most of our deductions. So I guess it depended on your unique facts and circumstances as to whether your tax went down. But there's no question it kind of broadened the spectrum on taxation, lower rates, but lower deductions. But I think generally speaking, we were paying less individually, but of course that tax act raised a lot of extra additional tax revenue, which the Democrats conveniently forget about. You know, they look at tax cuts. For some reason, they've got a tunnel vision, and for whatever reason, they don't think tax cuts apply to the middle class, and yet I can tell you they most assuredly do, and the upper class, for that matter. But, you know, if you've got a progressive tax code, theoretically, the upper tax brackets are going to get more benefit. It's how the math works. And, you know, I would say if you don't like it, change the law, Congress, because you're the ones that have created this monstrosity that we have now, and you're the ones that can fix it or can attempt to fix it. I'm not sure anybody can fix the mess we're in right now, and that's what's kind of scary is when you listen to those that are in the know. As an example, Arizona Republican Congressman David Swikert, got a couple of his videos on my video page under the resources tab at baplannershow.com. And if you go to YouTube and search on his name, you're going to see a bunch of videos. I need to get more of them up on our site because it's somewhat time consuming to hunt through the stack for the real jewels that are there, but there are some. And when you listen to him talk about the state of affairs regarding our debt, and you look at the charts that he's put together, and of course he's talking in the evening when Congress is for the most part, you know, gone for the day, but the congressman can still make presentations, and it's usually an empty chamber except for the obligatory speaker, quote unquote. And, you know, Swikert has the math. If you don't believe we got a problem, please start with the videos. I think we've got two or three on our site. Just play they're 30, 35 minutes. Play them several times and soak up the extent of the math. So you've definitely got a problem, whether you realize it or not. And the thing that most people have within their grasp, at least conceptually, is the ability to convert your pre-tax dollars in your retirement plans to after-tax, to Roth. And I'm, you know, that's quasi, the term after-tax is generally the issue. I mean, there's several ways of getting there, not just Roth conversions. I mean, you can make Roth contributions if you're employed with an employer that has a 401 plan with a Roth component now. Most do. I believe last statistic I saw is about 70 or 80% of all companies with 401 plans now have a Roth side of the plan. Think of it as a duplex where you've got a pre-tax and a after-tax or Roth. The self-directed 401 trust that we adopt and deploy for our self-employed clients. And self-employment, by the way, can be a side gig. So you could be participating in a plan with, you know, Exxon or USAA or whoever. It could be a smaller company. But if you have a side gig, maybe you consult, you drive Uber, you do Grubhub deliveries, you mow yards, you know, there's a number of things I can think of that qualify you to have a self-directed 401 trust. And that allows you to roll retirement funds in many cases, or to otherwise invest more of your self-employment earnings up to the maximum each year. This year we can contribute as much as $77,300, I believe is the number. It's the way to catch up. For those of you that are behind on retirement savings, this is a way to catch up. Now, obviously, you have to have the earnings to do so. And I don't want to get into the details on calculating the maximum, but if we're talking about Roth contributions, it's roughly the amount of earnings you would have to have. Net self-employment income is roughly $82,000 to $83,000. It's the $77,300 limit with the FICA and Medicare component grossed back up, so added back to it. And as long as you're making a Roth contribution, that's the level of earnings you need. Now, if you want to make a full contribution in the pre-tax mode, well, then you're limited to about 25% or so. And this is not the exact rule calculation. I'm just giving you a general estimate. You depend on whether you're self-employed as a sole proprietor or as an S corporation, you would need, you got a 20 and then a 25% limit, respectively on those two options. So you would have to have somewhere just over 200,000, to be able to deduct 20 or 25%. But those are details, okay? The big concept is, do you want to live the rest of your life with the uncertainty of knowing how much your partner, quote-unquote, in your retirement funds is going to be taking? I mean, what else do you do in life where you don't know how much is someone else's stake in your retirement assets? And, you know, as you think through this concept, you begin to realize the incredible, I'm going to call it a hoax, that was foisted on the working public, mainly the middle class in America, back when the whole concept of a 401k plan replaced the old style pension plans. We still have them, and guess where most of them are? It's the government employees, the congressmen, the judges, the prosecutors. I mean, I've got a friend that used to be a county prosecutor sitting on the civil side. And, you know, he was there. I think he was in office maybe 7 or 8 years. He's got a pension that will shock you. I mean, it's not $10,000 a month, but it's not $2,000 either. And when you figure out the burden that that has at all levels of just the government piece here, we're not even talking about the defined benefit plans that are still in existence with private companies, although those are few and far between now. But, you know, the federal PBGC, I think it's the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation is what the acronym stands for. We're backing that up. We're the FDIC, if you will, of the defined benefit type plan. And one of the reasons that the experts, Congress, came up with 401 plans, or at least passed it, was because the PBGC was going under. It was going out of business. You had some huge bankruptcies back in the day, and the plan, or the guarantor, was running out of the funds to be able to guarantee those plans with all the bankruptcies. So they put the concept of the 401k in place, which in large measure means that the employee is funding their retirement. The employer can make certain contributions, and most probably do. I don't know the statistic on that, but bottom line is, you better be putting contributions in or you're going to fall short. And with the condition that Social Security is now in, you know, you need to step up and be responsible for your own retirement lifestyle. It's not going to be the government. But in any event, the thing that we focus on, I mean, the combination of real estate, private company, partnership, multifamily, for the most part, multifamily syndications where, you know, 75 to maybe 150 or even 200 people, investors like yourself, passively invest your funds in an acquisition of maybe a 200 to 500 unit apartment building. Apartment assets are significantly different, or multifamily assets, than single family rentals, or something like office or healthcare facilities, other commercial real estate, strip centers, et cetera, that you could invest in. First of all, everybody needs a place to lay their head, not just tonight, but for the rest of their life. So that's one reason they're desirable. The way you value them is significantly desirable, more so than, say, single family. I've got clients that have 30 or 40 single family rentals, do a marvelous job running them, always keep them occupied, get rents that are market based, they're not under market. But the problem is, if they want to sell one of those properties, it's not the net operating income like we look at on apartments to get to a valuation. It's what their neighbor sold a home in the same area for 2 months ago, or a month ago, or maybe even a year ago. Depends on the volume of transactions. That's the cap on the amount that they're going to be able to sell that property for. And that takes time, typically, because when you look at what you're selling a single family property for, and this is double true on your residence, for the most part, you're simply getting back the inflation that took place over the last 30, 40, 50 years. And so when you sell a home you bought for $40,000 in a neighborhood in Houston, back in the 60s, and you're getting $500,000 now, that's pretty much inflation. You really don't have much of a true gain. The fact that you can escape tax on it, if you, at least to the extent of $500,000 or less, if you're married, a level of gain, that's great, but you shouldn't be getting taxed on it anyway. It's not true profit. In any event, so we like multifamily. Multifamily is valued based on the net operating income and the cap rate that an investor or bank, if you're refinancing, is going to capitalize those earnings at. And right now you're typically looking at 6.5%. As it goes down, which we expect it will with the rate, the interest rate drops, they kind of move in tandem, the property gets more valuable. And if they go up again, well, then properties get less valuable. But in any event, I think we're here on the edge of the end of the show. I want to talk next week, or let's say this would be, yes, next Thursday. The Sunday show that we have at 7 a.m. Will be Cybersecurity Sunday again. But next Thursday, I'm going to talk about other valuation techniques on multifamily assets. And I want to talk more and more about this because the projects are coming back. The rate's going to cooperate, it looks like, so we'll have more transactions to potentially expose people to. Well, I appreciate you listening, and the Sunday show, again, is on cybersecurity, and we're going to talk about the grenades, or the exploding chargers, I'm sorry, exploding pagers, and walkie-talkies, I believe, is on the agenda. We're glad you could listen today, and look forward to hearing you or seeing you next show. Thank you.
With Nathan Ross, CPA.